Mr. Cowan's Reel 5. You were at Duddington Camp, Mr. Cowan, and we talked about the very wet and muddy conditions that when you first got there. The recruits that were coming in, what was their background? Where were they coming from?
From all over the British Isles, all over. North, south, anywhere.
Were they good quality?
Well, it's usually, after a while, you've got to find out whether they're good quality or not. I mean, they're all apprehensive when they first came, what was going to happen. Until we got the initial training over, you know. But once we got the initial training and the bad weather, we took a bit. Wasn't so bad in the 10th day. But after all, we didn't know that we were going to be there for about 3 or 4 months. We were going to move on then.
And you were just doing basic training?
Yes, just doing basic training. Just the first decision, every part of the British Army had to go through a certain course. The usual drill and army inspections are different way back then. And schemes, plenty of schemes, you know, but they didn't start in Dunstan until about 6 or 6 weeks after they started. It was a fundamental part of the army, you know, through the course.
Were you feeding in a larger tent or
marquee?
And was the food just the typical food that you're getting used to? What were the first difficulties that a recruit faces when he comes into this situation?
Amazing, after that incident with the tents, I think it was also trying to come into the tents. That's the first obstacle that happened. Sort of But later on, the acclimatized very well, especially when I got the first fortnight or initial fortnight. I got everything sorted out, and as I said, the weather eased up. And it was, wasn't so bad after that. It was always in main duty to guards and different parts of the camp, because it was open camp. So there was a two entrance to the camp, so that the guards at both ends of the day. So, I don't think there's any much trouble that we're from the time then.
Were you a corporal at this time?
Yes, yeah.
You got your second stripe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in addition to your training duties, you would be doing guard commander and
yes,
so forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it wasn't actually much of important about the camp, because as I say, they tied themselves up after the as I said, it was when just a 4 months of marches and schemes and whatnot until they were acclimatized. And as a matter of fact, the last one or two people that went on up choosing different courses like it was anywhere. So I just know none of the 6 weeks training that way.
You were receiving then men who were doing their basic training, and then some of them, as you say, went on to officers' courses, mm-hmm. and what have you.
We eventually moved a camp up to Gullion from there. It was not very far away. North Burton and Gullion. So
what was the difference between that camp and the one you'd left?
Not much, because we still kept the... I think they sent half of the battalion up to Gullion and stretched it out a bit. We kept a small camp up there in Princeton. And so we were moved to another part of the British Isles. That was from Duddington. And they go in that way. We imagine they went to down the south to I think it was Maidstone, different places like that. Just spread out down the south. There was Rochester, Chatham, all near Loughlin, you know, that way. But they were stretched out, they spread out the battalion.
Was it still a training battalion?
Still a training battalion, yes. They came at most of the time. And as I say, we went to down the south for I think about 2 months. Then all of a sudden, there was another move, and we moved down to the Forks after that. To more barracks in Forks.
Did you have a beach protection role down there?
Down the Forks? Yes, we had a guard on the coastline up to Dover. We had down to the Metadol up there, the Sandgate. And from Sandgate very well to Forkham up on top to Kirsty Dover. That's all the area we were
And were all these moves rapidly following each other till you got to the coast?
Well, yes,
you weren't long in any one spot.
I think it was
who was commanding the battalion?
Colonel Rapid. I was forgetting.
Still the same chap that commanded you when you started?
Yes, it was the same fellow. Right up from Folkestone. I think the colonel left us at Folkestone, and we got another colonel to Major Dryden. And then same man, not in Fury. One of the French families, really, same man there. But, it was the same all the time. It varied in different days, but we were getting more. The troops that were there were more trained, fully trained, now they knew everything was going on, what was going on. But mostly the holding battalion, I would say, were holding battalion, just waiting for somebody to pick them, put them somewhere else, you know.
Was the battalion at full strength?
I think so. My dad, everything from HQ to the four companies and went through.
The four rifle companies
and
I think you said you were in C company, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who was commanding you, your company?
It was a Scottish officer. Captain Port, wasn't it? But I went from the same company, I went into HQ because I went in the regimental police.
When did this happen?
In Folkestone. I went up for a meeting with, I had a friend with Lance Corbett in there, and the police. And I had a sergeant friend, and the police. And he was in open kind of one of the corporals on the police. So, I went for an interview. I got the door in the regiment police simply because I could ride a motorbike. The one that could ride a motorbike. It was when the schemes were on, and patrolled all the roads, you know, did all the other transport different things. Also, we did a lot of patrolling between Folkestone and Sandgate, anyway, on the coast, just in case there were any troubles, sort of thing. I was put in charge of the train of further policing, how to ride a motorbike.
What make a motorbike did the unit have?
Norton's, Beezer's, DSA's, and three different types. I still get another one, man. But there was a Norton's, mostly Norton's, and the DSA's.
Were they fast, or the big machines?
Well, yes, pretty fast, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have to be, if you're taking convoys out. They practically taking convoys of soldiers all over the place, you see. And as I say, when there's a big scheme on, a big scheme with Canadians and everybody in the area, a big massive scheme that lasted about a week before this, and the troops are all geared up for up in the hills of Hawkins, where the hills were running, and they're always fully an option.
And your role was to lead the column, was it? Or
yes, keep it in front, take turns and get in front of the column and back of the column to make sure that, because then there's very poor light in on the transport, you know, just a wee little light in there on the head of the troops. And mostly they're all full of army personnel.
Was it mobile training that you were getting?
No, we were getting all sorts of things. We were getting trained for open air warfare. Digging trenches and different things they got, and attacking different schemes, attacking different units. So the Canadians were on one side, and the English on another side. A full scale scheme, you know.
And one acting as attackers and one as defenders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall whether any lessons were being learned from the war up to that time that you were putting into operation?
I think the battalion was fully aware of everything was going on, and I think they're all fully fit men and all fully experienced.
Can we examine the role of a regimental policeman? As it tended not to have the reputation of a very good one in the battalions.
We had a bit of it. We weren't as bad as the Red Caps. We weren't in the same class as the Red Caps. We had to make sure that the person that grew up was properly dressed at night time. Used to patrol the areas and make sure that they were properly dressed and there was no trouble. And if there was any trouble, stay there. Because there's always a guard. When the guard runs, there's always two regiment in place with a guard. By 3 at midnight. And then, so through the next morning, always two policemen and another guard. Because there's a great big guard in the place. Proper guard in the
Did you have distinctive parts to your uniform which made you...
Just the armband with RP on the armband. But the main thing was discipline. That was all there to keep discipline. Whether it was in the camp or outside the camp. He's got quite a bit of time, you know. Different parts of the ones had in force, the ones had one of our chaps, a corporal, was married to an usherette in it. And the cinema, she was murdered down there, unfortunately, at the time we were in the big. And they do about that, you know. Anyway, most soldiers in camp had about 2 or 3 days' time or so. But eventually, they found out she was married to a couple in the tank, armor car thing, you know, bed carriers and whatnot. And she was murdered down there. It's funny, but they. Also, all the troops was interrogated, and we had to go all over the prison, doing different interrogations when it was in.
Were you trained to do that?
Oh, I'm not trained to do that. I'm not trained to do that. We had to use our own initiative, you know.
When you joined the regiment police, did that bring in any particular training for yourself?
No, different type of training, you know.
What kind of things were you learning about?
Well, how the apprehension of prisoners and arresting prisoners and whatnot, and how they wrote much about the arresting prisoners. They had a very careful, you know.
Did you have handcuffs to restrain the more violent ones?
No, nothing like that. I think if I needed was a couple of policemen as well, we needed to handle it. Whenever I come across any sort of violence, you know, really violent, whether it's tear violent prisoners, they all the one was obstinate and whatnot. But when the sun got set into the glass house in Aldershot, that's the best sentence that was, it put the wood up and sort of thing.
Did you escort anyone to Aldershot?
I escorted one bloke. He fired a rifle and was in a way, tried to get himself out of the army of wood. But he was keen to wood and keen his rifle before he shot part of his foot. And he's put on a charge and it was funny, he was trying to. Maybe escape the German army, the Cuban army. And I think he was given 56 days.
He deliberately shot his foot.
Well, it was proven.
And that was in the detention camp.
Yes. So we just took him down there and handed him over and escorted him down. That was it.
And that was a pretty rough place to be.
Oh yes, it was. We just followed up with what happened. We just. Learned a bit about the rough things they did once they got the RP and the regiment or their prison. You know, and then very little happened as fortunate for that.
Did you have, before we go on, did you have cells in your guard room for prisoners?
Yeah, it was a proper guard, barracks. There was two of them, the nerve barracks a bit further over. We were in war barracks, and the nerve barracks, I forget the name, but the nerve barracks were over. Some other regiments were in between, the next regiment. But that was a proper, anybody pinched up, it was from those particular houses that was evacuated in, but that was a sort of main thing when I was down there. People was going into houses that was empty because the people had gone out of the area, you see. And it was the pilfering. Of course, we got them there, and they got 40 days or 28 days. We came to our guard room, and we gave them the proper duties of a prisoner, and we had the proper cards for prisoners.
What duties would they have to do if they were fastened up there?
Well, they were up early in the morning, sorting themselves out as usual, and doing cookout duties. Washing the dishes, peeling potatoes, and so there's a route march with a double up here where in the barracks square, you know. Kept them going all day. There was only time I had up was for measles, sort of thing.
Did you have punishments like, as you say, doubling around the square with rifles over the heads? What was the routine there? Did you just give them a time to go around which they had to finish, or did you watch them just discern when?
I had it in a certain time, and it always, didn't matter where they went, it was always policemen, because I mean, we had there was a man's corporal called Leonard Sargent, and about four or five other policemen at the same time. You see. Actually, we were there when Falkland got bombed one Sunday morning. All the lads just lined up ready to go to church. And for Mr. Smith to come in and hit the church where they were going to, and the Metropole Hotel, that was where the medical place was, the medical hotel. And he hit that as well, and the harbour. So there's a little confusion there, and that's in the window.
What happened?
Well, we were stationed at that time, we had been shipped from the barracks into the One Pack Hotel for the police to be in the centre of the town. And then we were polishing what boots were in one. We had policemen over on duty and the crossroads in front of one, the policeman in the parade. And one of the policemen was just there, he has four Mr. Smiths coming over very low. And all of a sudden, somebody shouted, not Mr. Smiths, not the English planes, but Mr. Smiths. We thought the English planes just flying low. And before we heard of the bombs going off. We were very close because our hotel shook from where our hotel was. Just across the road, so we dashed out and said, the policeman was on duty at the crossroads, ready for guiding all the traffic and whatnot. He was left up against the wall, but he wasn't anybody. And we went and hadn't seen anybody in the church itself, you know, outside. And there was four people killed. There was the Virgin and three people held in the church, 24 people were in the church. So, you know, an awful experience. I was in with one of the first policemen. And we're looking for any people with injuries. And I've seen that someone showed that he had somebody in the thing here under the building. And when we lifted up, a woman's hand came away. What's that? We didn't know where the body was, but the hand was there. You know, it was a funny experience. That was our first taste of being in action, so to say, where there were injuries. So it was a bit of a shame again.
The men who, you say, they were waiting to get to go to church, were they sent back to the camp, or did they help with the rescue?
They were dispersed and were sent down to the harbour to help, and most of them went to the Metropole Hotel to help with the casualties that were transferred with immediately. Actually, I think the jury made a mistake. It was somebody who were clocks. Now, I don't know whether the hour had to go forward or back. I think during the time, if you had been an hour, a half an hour later, if you hit the church with it, it was for the truth. So that was unfortunate. It was forced and unfortunate. Forced for the truth and forced for the jury. I think we lost one train and one back.
Were there many raids on Folkestone while you were there?
There was about four altogether. Really bad ones. Occasionally we should see them flying over towards Hawkins area and whatnot. That was the worst door, you know. But that was the worst one we had in Portsmouth.
You'd see a lot of air action with dogfights, did you? Okay.
I was talking about a brilliant dogfight between the Italians and the British Messerschmitt. I think the sergeant major and the officer was trying to get us in the cold, but most of the troops wanted to see what was happening. So, as I say, we saw many battles.
How did the people of that area receive you?
Oh, very well, very, very well. Now, where we went was, over Scotland was the same as in Scotland, and down the west, down the east coast, very, very soon.
You were invited into their homes?
I forgot to tell you, we in a battalion, we formed a dance band, and I was a double bass player, so I was in a band, I think, to play different groups. The Canadians were German Brits, and they hired us in different places. We used to have the dances for the locals in the camp. We used to have a weekly dance at the camp. And I was in the dance. I was in the tail of the dance band, so I was fully occupied with the job in the army and the dance band at night. So
Was drunkenness a problem for you?
Yes, drunkenness was one of the main problems. We should get it. Eventually, so we should get to go out to force you for a night out or something like that. Instead of coming to a lateness, you know, coming late at a time, at a certain time, charging people coming to late at a certain time, you know. That was one of the main things. You know. But the police was a guard and had a guard every night to make sure they were. But there were a lot of big nappy in the camp, and there was quite a few good one or two of them in the camp, but nothing to throw it, nothing to alarm us or throw it out.
There were no major problems though, that you had to face. Would you get, you'd have to get used to a lot of abuse, no doubt.
Oh yes, yeah. You should have more of those bad news, you get caught all of those. Well, the great repertoire was most of the lads in the camp, they were respected most people. It was just the odd ones, like everywhere I say, but the odd ones that had something bad to say about, you know. I mean, the same people, most of the same people, if you're in trouble, they couldn't have you. If you're in trouble in the camp, they couldn't have the same people.
Do you recall having to restrain someone physically?
Oh, many times, yes, many times. It was the odd one that was going to. But as I say, it was all good. Once about every guard house and eight in the cells, you should throw most of them, and then on the charge they did, and they got what they call CV. It wasn't in the prison, but it was, they had to report their garden every hour, every night, so they didn't go everywhere. So it would help the cells.
Can we just come back to the kind of things that you would make prisoners do? You mentioned scrubbing the cells and cleaning the areas. Did you have any of these, what would appear to be ridiculous punishments, where they used toothbrushes to polish places and this kind of thing?
We used to have a real good kit. That kit was all laid out every day. But at night time, they had the blanket and the webbing up, and polishing the brushes, and polishing the shoes. That was the main thing. The night time for it to be in the cell. But
were there on things like a less food ration or a more mundane one, bread and water, this kind of thing?
The only time that would be issues in the cell were really bad. But they weren't ever too bad in the time. Not guarantee severe punishment, you know.
Was everything done at the double when they were in the camp marching around?
Yes, that was one thing.
Which is Durham Light Infantrymen, they should have been able to do quite well.
Of course, it quieted down a bit when I was seeing the prisoners that was doing it. They were being ridiculed when they saw the other troops marching up and down, and I think myself, and got through to them at the finish, because later on it died down the amount of people we got into the cell, you see. So I think that rubbed through what they had to do. They were doing them march on the arms and all the heads and whatnot. So I think it quieted down. The battalion was tip top of that. It was fully organised for everything, to shoot the guards and didn't mean that, you know.
And there was no physical punishment on someone who'd done some particularly, you know, hard crime.
I can't recall any.
What time would a prisoner have to get up in the morning that was in the guard room?
6:30. Mm-hmm. And he gets up 6:30, and then, as I say, he kind of bucket of water and scrubbing and scrub himself out there. And the whole guard room was scrubbed over, the whole lot of them. And then he'd go and play tea, physical training. And after that, there would be tea to have breakfast. They all was sat apart from the other people,
and then back to the cells after the meal.
They got a short spell in the cell, you know, medicine. But and we should do all our duties on the in the cookhouse, or helping in the stores, or even helping in the nappy. But you should watch out which prisoners got the best jobs. That's what it is. I think they all realise the better they were, the better the jobs they got. So.
The general fatigues kind of work, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. And you say that on manoeuvres you had these tasks of guidance and seeing the concert. Presumably, if you came to crossroads, someone would be on the crossroad, were they?
It was a big scheme. One is you go to the crossroads and guide the traffic to the map weapons and whatnot, so that they could go where they had. And another one, after he was finished, he would drop to the back of the column, and another one. Especially for doing long distance, when we go anywhere, any other place, I could tell them.
What was the usual road discipline of a convoy moving through the countryside?
I could tell you about that later on. Right. When we moved from Folkestone to right away down to the Peyton and then. Yeah.
Okay, we'll come to that later. Do you recall what date you were at Folkestone?
I think we left Scotland about 6 months.
So we're into 1941.
Yeah.
And the main invasion scares were over then, in effect, weren't they?
Well, no, they weren't especially
You were still prepared.
I think the guard, when we left, there was another battalion came into Morbaris, and they had to take all of the muscle. They were the same duties. So
there were large barracks, you say?
Yes, proper army barracks. So you get in Winchester and pull them down the south. The main barracks of the British Army down there. They were all properly built, great built. They weren't haphazard. Massive big drill squares and other massive places where they wanted to do things up there.
And the regimental police, did they have a barrack room to themselves?
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many were there altogether?
I think it was nine or ten.
And you'd all be NCOs?
No. It was six private and there was no police.
Who commanded?
It was just the sergeant, just the...
Do you recall his name at that time?
O'Neill was the first one I had there. He was the first one. He's a regular sergeant, he's a regular soldier, that's what he had been on for a long time. Lance Corporal Morgan, he was a regular soldier, he had been in India all over the place for him. He was one of the regulars. He was actually my friend. Real pal, you know. Race for the front of town, he was always my friend. We visited each other, you know.
And your own turnout was of a high standard, being regimental police.
Oh, yeah, you had to be properly dressed. I mean, even the DLI badge and the armband, you had to be polished all the time. I mean, you had to be tip-top. It was no good pulling people up for having their boots dirty or equipment dirty if yours wasn't right, you see. And I know that on top of that, the three policemen had motorbikes. Those three policemen had motorbikes. You had to look at some motorbikes at the same time. Unless it was anything serious, and I went to the MT, the HQ was a bit repaired. So, you know.
But they were highly polished and cleaned. Your duties then were purely for the battalion, or did they go farther afield than that? Your own?
Just for our battalion.